Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Forrest Stevens Show. I just wanted to start today off a little bit with a thank you to the people that have ordered my book. Thank you very much. I've already gotten a few orders in the first week, I think five or so, which is pretty awesome. It's great to know that these books are going to be floating out there and people are going to be flipping through them, reading them, and maybe some new thought will happen. Five might not sound like much to you, but to me, that's awesome because we have a very small audience here and it is only the first week. I mean, it's now the other big thing about it. Whoa, this is huge. But you don't have to put the subtitle in, which the subtitle is Thoughts and Insights from the Trip. You don't have to put that in the browser anymore. You just can put tripping and this book will come up. So some SEO on Amazon, good stuff. Oh, also everybody, I hired someone on Fiverr, paid them a few clams, and they reformatted it for me from paperback into an ebook. So if you have a Kindle, if you have Kindle Unlimited, it's actually free, but it's $2.99 for the Kindle ebook as well. I do highly recommend still getting the paperback because the intention of this book is to flip to it randomly, or at least that's one of the intentions. And you can't do that with a Kindle, really. And the other part of it, too, is expanding on it and using it as a sort of journal. So that's another thing that you can't do. So you don't get the full functionality out of the Kindle. But, you know, if you don't have the clams, if you don't have 10 bucks for this book, that's what I'm charging here on Amazon, 10 bucks. Which I make a very, very tiny profit of because most of that goes into the cost of what it costs to print one of these. And, just thanks to those few people who have bought the book already in the first week of it being out. Very exciting, very happy about it all. So I just, flipped to a random page here. The one on the right here, I think I've talked about before. So let's check. I've talked about both of these before, that's for sure. Okay, here we go. Why do we have a consciousness that plagues us like a disease? An animal that knows no I, is it enlightened? Or because it lacks the level of consciousness we have, is it ignorant? I've definitely talked about this before on one of these episodes. So for those people binging this, I'm sorry. For those people who have been following along or who watch at a reasonable pace, not like a psychopath, like how I listen to podcasts, just nonstop all day. For those people who are new to this idea, the idea is that like animals, and this is such like a face value, very stupid thing, but it's like, animals aren't like us, brother. Animals are different than us. We're different than animals. Such a high thought, you know, such a thought that you have when you are tripping. But it's like, you know, I really wonder, you know, what is an animal thinking? Is it just acting off base instinct? Because I've had those experiences before where your mind is completely blank. And you are a physical animal. And that doesn't mean that you're only doing physical things, but I guess it kind of does because it's even like you can see something, you internalize it mentally, but it's not, it's really basic, the interpretation. It's like sending you a signal of like, go there, don't go there. Like this is important, this isn't important. Like it's really, really basic kind of communication, which is very amazing actually when it happens. It's like, you know, I think back at like our ancestors and possibly even the species that we evolved from. They would have communicated in a way where if they were in a group together and they were hunting, the one at the front that would see something would turn to the other one, connect with them through eye contact and point and go, ugh. Or, I mean, we do that even now, right? Even if you're hunting now, the exact same interaction happens, but we have a word for it. You know, we say, deer, there's a deer up there. You can even go even further now, right? You can, and like, you know, we've been able to do this for a long time as a species, but if we go back far enough, we didn't have the intelligence of communication that we have now, where we can even go beyond and say, I'm going to go around, I'm going to flank, and I'm going to set up a blind. Like, we don't have any, I mean, we do now have very complicated abilities of communication. We can even go past the hunting analogy, and we can build systems that are complicated. We can build, like, building something is insane. Like, a vehicle is insane. Like, it's not, I mean, it's crazy enough to think of the invention of it, but it's crazy to think that somebody could design something that a vehicle does, because there's so many different components, and ultimately it's a whole team of people, but there also is the ability of one person to look at all of those systems. But collectively we become like a team building a car is one mind. Like, that's the crazy thing about beliefs and ideas, is that they can be created and thought in a group mind. Like, because we power together, basically we have the ability to do very complex things. But to get back to our connection with an animal, there was a point in our evolution where we did not have that ability. We had the ability to bark like a dog, but maybe a little bit more, you know, like apes, you know, orangutans, chimpanzees, they can point at things. There's videos of this, you know, they can point at something and they can signal like, that is what I want. And then they can point, like throw it up above my cage that I'm in this zoo. And then somebody does that and they reach up and they actually grab it out of the air. They catch it. They know what's going to happen. They can communicate to another species, something like what we would have been able to at some point in our evolution. And I think when, there's this thing that happens with minds, you know, it's like, I can see myself as that caveman that can communicate very simply. And I have felt that as this human as well, especially under the influence of something very strong like LSD, you know, I've definitely had that experience where it's very primal. I feel completely like an ape, and it feels like I'm an animal. But that's not my reality. You know, that's not usually my reality. Usually I'm a lot more in my mind, and I'm thinking about much more complex things, because those are not even, like, I'm thinking about things that are not even in the vicinity of me. I'm thinking about an event that's happening. I'm thinking about somebody else, an experience that I had or an experience that I'm going to have. These are much more complex than the thought of, oh, there's danger, oh, there's food. You know, basically those are the two main things. I mean, I guess there's also, there's reproduction. It's like, you know, there's, I don't know if that's, I mean, but yeah, I mean, we do have like a communication of like lust. That is a very base function as well, base function of communication. And it happens in animals at a very base level. Animals have a much different relationship with sex than we do as humans. We've created a much more complex idea about what that is, just as we've created a much more complex idea of communicating danger, of saying there's resources, right? We have much more complex ideas. We have to create an idea, oh, there's this money here, there's this resource here, and this is how we get it. Or, you know, and or maybe even you don't have a team anymore, you know. I think we're made to work with other people. We're totally made to work with other people, because it is so beneficial for you to do so. It's why Apple is so successful, is because they have the best and brightest designers and marketers. And, you know, the same can be said for any corporation out there that is successful. It's largely to do with the community mind, the single mind that they've created, or maybe even the multitude of minds. So there's a different team working on different projects, and they are their own mind, and there's one mind overlooking them. You know, the all-seeing eye on the dollar bill. the top of the pyramid, you know. The structure of corporate world is a pyramid, 100%. You don't walk into even every job. You don't walk into a kitchen as if it's your own kitchen if you are the dishwasher. You have specific things that you do. Even if you're a sous chef, a chef, even if you're the only cook there, if you're the only cook there, maybe, but it's like you still are walking in there with the idea of serving something for somebody else and for a business way. And, you know, I don't think there's really anybody out there with a business that is solely and only their own, because they also work with distributors. Like, keep the example of the kitchen. Like, even, you know, a single person business like a hot dog stand, right? You think, okay, well, that's one person that owns that hot dog stand, is selling there. Okay, but are they working with a group of people at the government to make sure that they have a legal right to be able to sell this hot dog? Oh, okay, well, then they're working with somebody. Are they working with some company that employs a whole team of people that processes that hot dog? Even the people that grew the animals that went into that hot dog. And that goes for all the other condiments and buns and everything, right? Oh, so that person is actually working with a ton of different people and different systems, and it is extremely complex. So this idea here got me kind of going on a different idea, which I think I'm just going to keep going with. And that's the beauty of this. What I'm using this as, and what I think that this book could be used as, is a jumping off point. I don't think that and that's what I'm using it for now in this podcast. I'm saying that now because if you're a listener, you'll realize that sometimes I go through this sentence by sentence and I start breaking it down. But I think the thought I'm having now about how everybody is so connected is actually more interesting. And this would be, so basically I would add to this. I would write down in here, but instead of writing, I'm talking. And I think that maybe I will do some writing in here afterwards, and that will probably end up summing up what I'm trying to learn about the world right now. Because that's the crazy thing, is like, I think I can speak from this personally, and I think it probably applies to other people, but I look at people who know something as in they just know it. I never think about the way they learned it. Like, even it's like, when somebody has a PhD in something, you're like, oh, that person knows about that thing. But you don't think about what they actually know about that thing. And the only way you actually know something about something is by learning it, right? And everything is so complex now. And everything, it's not even now, it's just the world has always been so complex. And it doesn't really have a simple thing about it. And I think that's why we sum up so much unknown, so much complexity into simple ideas like God, like the universe, like life, like our experiences. You know, all of those words alone sum up the most complex shit that we could ever think about. And by labeling them, we don't have to go down that way. And that's an interesting thing too, and does relate back actually to this idea about this animal self. Is what's interesting about that, you know, that way of communicating that I talked about, that simplicity of mind, is that I've had that when I've been on psychedelics, like I mentioned, you know, a strong dose of psychedelics will take me into my animal self. But there's other times that I felt that as well. And there's other times I felt degrees of it. So it's pretty close. You know, it's like, it's when you're meditating. It's when you get into, and I'll speak from personal experience. It's when I have done a serious meditation that has really hit. It's when I have done physical activity that's really hit. It's when I'm in the flow, right? That state of flow, it's basically when your mind is clear. I have felt a degree of this feeling of being a physical being and being simple and just living. And right, it's like, that is what's happening when we are in the moment. We don't have, nobody describes as in the moment as being here right now, consciously thinking about something. It's really, when people talk about being in the moment, they're much more talking about not having something in your mind happening, but just experiencing it and feeling it. But you can feel thinking about something consciously. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm putting my energy into my brain. I'm allowing blood to pump there. Blood is not pumping into my arms as I physically do something. It's not pumping into anything. The best place for me to think is a place that my brain, my body does not have to do anything, so that all the energy I have can go to my brain and my brain can activate so that I can think. And that's living in the moment as well, or it can be. You know, you can live in the moment and still be thinking. I think that's something that I didn't realize when I got into New Agey, semi-religious bullshit out there, is that I thought the idea of meditation was just not to think. But it's not that. It's about living. And I learned that, you know, and I've known that. And what I'm saying is that's a place that I have felt that feeling of being an animal. The other time, although my memory is a little vague, is probably when I'm an infant and toddler, you know, very small child. There's not much going on up here. There's a lot going on in your body, though. There's some things going on in here. But when you're a kid, you know, when you're 1 year old, 1 year, there's one and it's plural. That's how many years it is. When you're a year old or so, you are not using words, you're not using sentences, you're not using ideas, you are pointing and you are going, eh, eh. And hopefully you have a guardian there looking out for you and saying, oh, do you want this? And then the little baby goes up and goes, eh, and is communicating, because letting that person know that yes, again, or, you know, it's always dependent on their ability, but there is this stage in childhood development where that child is an animal. It's an ape. It doesn't really have a consciousness. It's not really aware of complex things, like, for instance, the idea that other people mean anything. There's a point where your child is basically a narcissist, a psychopath. But that's just part of the development. It just doesn't know yet. It doesn't know about complex things like other people's pain. It knows about its own pain, but it doesn't know about other people's yet. And it learns, you know, you learn. You learn to become conscious and you learn to have complex thought. And I think there's a time in everyone's life. And I think that's why, you know, for instance, when I had that LSD experience of becoming an animal, where I left that experience being like, that was really enriching because it taught me so much that I didn't know. And I think what it was teaching me was a different way of living. And it felt so good because I have felt that way before. It wasn't completely new, but it felt completely new because it was so intense and so transparent of what it was. I think a lot of times even we will live in the moment, but we won't even be aware of it. we will get into that flow state. We will get into a degree of our animal self, and it will feel good and be good, but maybe to such a small degree that we might not acknowledge it, or at such a regular dosage that we might not acknowledge it. And something like a psychedelic experience is, it's a much bigger dose of what that animal self feels like, that living in the moment itself feels like, and that feels more intense, you know. So it's very interesting, you know. It's I think about people's lives, and I think about how we really try hard not to have extremes in our lives. You know, we try to plan ahead so that we have food in 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, a week, even longer, in our house, so that in a week's time, we don't get hungry. We don't come to the conclusion that we don't have any resources. And this goes for everything. This is about money. This is about, you know, something that we all try hard at is not living in the moment. We try hard about thinking about the future, because it's almost like, the crazy thing is, it's like the people that are the most competent and competitive are the ones who think the most about that, or not even think the most about that, but are very successful at that. And they're very much rewarded in the store of energy, which is capital and money. And the people who don't think that far ahead in those ways, they don't have the complex thought. They might actually be living in the moment more, although their moment might be difficult to live in. So they have other ways to not live in the moment, but it's purely out of coping. You know, it's video games, it's TV, it's porn, it's alcohol, it's shopping, it's anything you can get addicted to. It's addiction. Addiction is always, in my opinion, always, and by always, I mean there are going to be tons of outliers, so definitely not always. But in my opinion, I think a lot of addiction stems from pain. I mean, could you be even more obvious than that? Of course, right? I think people are going to agree on that. I think we could basically universally agree from that on that. Comes out of there being some kind of pain, and what you're doing is relieving that pain. Now, it might be creating a different pain. You might have some side effects. I mean, there might be side effects to dangerous like behaviors, doing them over and over. That's crazy, huh? Is that a side effect, or is that just you're rolling the dice every time you do something dangerous? And one of the outcomes is that you're going to lose eventually, right? If you gamble enough, you will lose. Now, you want those odds to be in your favor. And that's why people don't say, hey, that person has an addiction to working out. That person has an addiction to providing for their family. Like they're just like crazy about doing the right thing for themselves and theirs. And, you know, people don't talk about that. They say, oh, that person has an addiction to gambling. It costs them a lot of money, and that's squandered, you know. Those people have an addiction to cigarettes, and cigarettes don't do anything good. They might take you out of a social situation. They might give you something to fidget on. They might give you some sort of habit. Those are all things that are easing you in some way. But nobody talks about that as, oh, cigarettes are good because they help people who fidget a little bit. You know, it's like, no, there's better things to do, because cigarettes are actually going to kill you. So it's, you know, it's the same with everything. We could go down that road. We could dissect why people are addicted to, you know, have eating disorders. And basically what I'm saying is, it stems from pain. Now, this kind of, I think it relates back. I got definitely sidetracked there. My mind is going 120, and this podcast is recording at 100. and I just fall behind, you know? That brain that's going 120, it's got to pull off eventually and allow me to kind of catch back up. And this is what this is trying to do. I'm basically just wasting your time on mic right now while I try to remember how these two things that are fading from my memory are connected. And I don't know if they are, but that's that's what happens when you, or at least that's what happens for me a lot of times when I start thinking about a subject and why I need to revisit it, is because I can reach something new, but that's about as much as my brain capacity has. You know, it's like, I really actually find it, as much as I have harped, and I probably still will harp on people like Joe Rogan for just kind of talking about the same thing over and over and missing tons of jokes and just like not, and just having like such biases, and I don't know, he's just a fucking silly guy, you know. I just don't think he's all there. And but it's like, it's kind of crazy that he is at the level that he's at for 3.5 hours with people. And that goes for any one of his guests as well. You know, people that are guests on his show, they are pros at what they are at, you know, like what they're good at. Because otherwise, how could you talk for that long about it? How could you talk for that long about somebody? But I think, you know, he rides those ebbs and flows, and him and his guests all have different levels of ability in doing that. Some people are better at it than others. But what I'm saying is, I know for myself that at a certain level in heightened thought, I become fatigued. And it's not like I'm, you know, it probably is easier to talk about something that you know of, that you've come prepared with, or that you have that much subject matter on, some sort of expertise that you've studied or something, or experienced. It's probably easier to talk about something like that for 3 hours than to get lost on a tangent of new thought like I'm doing. That sounds braggadocious, but I do think that it's hard. I think that I feel it. I feel my energy levels go down after having a certain amount. It's almost like I fill my cup of new thought and I gotta say, okay, let's revisit that. Let's listen to that over, you know, yourself. Like, I listen to these podcasts as like a way of like experiencing that new thought in a different way. So I've talked about this as well, but I think that podcasting in this way is like this crazy editing. It's like writing something and then you know, a week later, month later, year later, going back to it and reading it, and you're a different person. It's the same format though, and this to some degree, like, you know, a blank page is a different format than a page with things on it. So there is that, but this is a much different format. So I'm speaking this, and then when I edit it, I'm listening to it and I'm watching it, and I'm, in listening to it, creates a completely different, it creates it completely different in your brain. And I will lose it still. Like, I won't remember it even though I've listened to it and I've spoken it. So writing it down is helpful too, because writing is actually a very good way of recording thoughts. It's a very, very good way of it. And that's why I've done this. Like, this was not intentionally written. This was an outlet for my new thoughts that were happening. And I didn't have time to record a podcast about it or even say it so much as I had the ability to write it. You know, these thoughts that I had, these were in the middle of a yoga session. I'm doing hard poses. I'm moving. And I have to stop, which equates to taking a break from being in that powerful, powerful feeling experience. I have to step out of that, which is jarring, but I find it worth it, because in 3 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, as quick as possible, I jot something down and then I go back into that position. It takes me a little while to get back into that place, but then I will start to either continue that thought or I'll just be in somewhere else, because it's such a powerful experience. And that's what these are. This is that just root expression. Just get it out of there as quickly as possible because I'm in it right now. I'm feeling this. I'm thinking this. This is something that I am exploring and learning about. Each one of these things is me learning something, which does go back to something that I talked about in this podcast, how you have to learn something to know something. And we have these blanket ideas that, yeah, when somebody goes to school for something, or when somebody has done something in the past, that they know how to do that. And there is merit to that. There is merit to that, of course. It's doing a lot of the heavy lifting of upping the probability of success. That's why you hire somebody with experience. And it's actually very interesting. I was just going to get into something personal there, but maybe I will. Maybe I will. You guys know, if you've been listening along, we're moving. We just had somebody, a month and a half ago, we had people come and look at our house, and they signed a lease to rent it in August, and we had them communicate that they lost their job. You know, this happened last week. They lost their job and are unable to rent, basically. And it was very interesting. Like, and I was just like, well, the big thing is I don't want to rent to somebody that doesn't want to rent here. Like, I'm not going to hold somebody to that lease. Unless it's, well, I don't know. Like, it's different when somebody's actually living here, but it's like, basically what it is I don't want that problem before you're actually renting from me. Sorry. I don't want that problem when you're actually renting to me, because then I actually have to deal with it. Right now, it's like, okay, we basically avoided a problem, because if you had been fired 2 months from now, that would actually be an issue for us. I want to get somebody who has experience, whose past can prove to me that they will be a good renter for me. And how you do that is you have people fill out applications and you check their references, 100% you check their references, and you make sure, oh, this person has worked where they've worked for this long, they have paid rent where they were renting for this long, they are good tenants, people can say that, and you look at all those things. And all of those things increase if you dissect them properly and you assess them in a way, they will increase your probability that you're going to have a good tenant, that I'm going to have a good tenant. Now, the lower they score on these things can make that percentage go a little less. And me, as somebody, and every choice you do is a bet, right? Every choice you make is a bet that you're choosing the right path. And that you're not going to want to step over to this path because you'll waste a little bit of time and effort transitioning those paths. So you make those bets. And, you know, getting somebody, you know, it's a very obvious example when you're going to have tenants where you say, okay, I'm making a bet that this person is going to pay their rent more likely and not be issue or enjoy the space. Like, that's the other thing too, is like, I want to find people who are actually going to fit in this space. You know, it's like, this is a house I'm renting. So I'm hoping, you know, like, one single person actually scores a lower level, because I don't think they'll be as satisfied having such a big house as a couple, or as a couple with a kid, or a couple with animals, or somebody with some need for space, right? Like, because I know how I am. Like, this motorhome that I'm in is perfect for me as a single person because it's big enough for me. I don't need more than this. Now, I'm not a single person, so we don't living here full-time because it's not perfect for two people. It's not the right size for two people. It's the right size for two people when you're traveling, and it's a fine size temporarily. But the right size is bigger, and I'm moving to a cabin. You know, it's not a mansion or even a house. It's a cabin. And I think it's going to be the right size for us. So just like that, I don't want a tenant who is getting into something because there's nothing else available. That's the crazy thing about my area here is there's literally nothing else available for people to rent or buy. And that's the thing about Canada's real estate in general is they need... There just needs to be a construction boom across Canada, and there can be and will be, because there are so many people and so few, and actually not enough housing, which is crazy. So I'm looking for somebody that, that's going to be the right fit. And I score that, right? And that doesn't really say anything about them. That just talks about their situation. It's not all just numbers. You know, you got to factor in things like that. I don't want somebody that's not going to enjoy living here, because also, guess what? That's going to affect me. That's going to make them leave earlier. If somebody doesn't like somewhere, they don't stay there. They change their life. And, I want the best probability of somebody staying and being good tenants. Of course, that's all you can ask for as a landlord. Good tenants and a little bit of income for your risk. Because that's the thing, is like there's all these memes about like landlords and shit. And it's like, they're putting a lot of risk. Like they have a mortgage. They're leveraged. They've leveraged their money. And they're lucky to have the capital to be able to put toward, and I mean lucky, and there's lots of factors, but a lot of it's luck, that they have that capital to invest into a house, and then they're leveraging out, or they're doing work. Like my down payment here was a fraction of what I've actually put in this house as far as money and time. Put a ton of time in this house, and time is money, because time is effort and energy, and I could have been doing that towards something else that made money. So all that lost opportunity cost, or not lost, because I feel like I invested it well, actually. But there's a lot of money and time that I've put in this house, and there's leverage that I hold on it, and there's risk of there's always risk of default if something crazy happens, and that would actually be really detrimental to your credit score, my credit score, my future ability, credit cards, having to declare bankruptcy basically, or having to take out another personal loan and move things around, and just all the stress, and like there's all this risk that you take on as a homeowner that those memes definitely don't get, because they're basically not talking about me as a landlord. They're talking about some corporation that is literally just profit driven, and every single person in there is an employee, and the house is just an asset to extract as much capital out as possible. For me, I lucked out. I bought when interest rates were so low. In Canada, you have to refinance every 5 years, I believe, is the max. At least that's what mine is. So I have to refinance in a couple of years, but for 3 years, I've been paying an interest rate of 1.89. So I've been able to do a lot of damage at that principal because my interest rate was so low. And so when I refinance, even at those levels, and because I bought before the markets even went higher, it's crazy, but the mortgage payment that I'm making now and the mortgage payment after 5 years of paying my mortgage, because the interest rates have changed, and I assume they'll be similar levels in a couple of years, or I'm actually hoping they'll be lower again, but at current rates, if I had to refinance, I would be paying, if current rates, but I had the amount paid that I will in 2 years, I will pay the exact same amount on my mortgage every month, but I'm paying off way less of it over those 5 years because the interest rate is so much higher. So with that, it's actually makes the calculation very easy to figure out what I have to charge for rent. And that's the thing that corporations are looking at, is they're looking at all those metrics that I talked about with the applicant, but they're also looking at the metrics really deeply of how much they can actually charge. And so they're going to charge the most they can. And for me, it's like the variables that go into what I charge per month for the rent here is mortgage, insurance, taxes, maintenance, and then a little bit extra for me for the risk that I'm taking on. And that total is the rental cost. Because when I refinance, if the rates are the same, I'm paying the same and I still have the same amount of money coming in. The other thing that I will talk about with my renters and will be on the lease is that I can charge I haven't figured out if it's going to be the maximum, but I'm going to basically increase the rent every year on them. And there's a certain cap that you can do that at, like legally, and I will definitely stay under that cap. And it will basically be for some sort of inflation, or even just as that interest rate goes in, just kind of the base, keeping in line. Like inflation would be great, but I don't think that you can raise your rent like 7%, like what inflation actually is every single year. No, it's lower than that some years, but 2% inflation is not actually a real thing. That's just some crazy number that they're making up because shit's expensive. Every year it gets more. And that's because the companies themselves will actually charge more for base things. Like housing. Like they'll raise it as much as they possibly can, these corporations, right? Every single year. For me, it's going to just be dependent on what I think is fair. And of course, under the legal limit. So I don't know. That's so interesting, actually, how I went from like talking about this and then like the passage in the book and then kind of starting to define it and just going down this deep rabbit hole of what I think is very, very interesting about this animal self that we can experience, about how we experienced it as a child and how it affects us now when we experience it and how it's affected me, which I didn't get into too much, but I did mention how powerful it can be to feel that true, authentic animal self. And for me, I strive for that more because I think that this world that we live in, that the people that can think most complex and can have that kind of mind energy and ability are very successful in this world monetarily. And so there's a lot of drive for that. There's a lot of competition. We are cooperative people, as in we are all connected and we all form teams and think of and are capable of much more together than we are apart. And throughout history, it's proven that humans are capable of working together to create amazing things. But within that, there's the people at the top, right? Within that, it's not a circle. It's not a cooperative. Businesses are not co-ops. They are pyramids. They are people at the top profiting from everyone else below them. And that profit, I mean, that's the thing too, is there's a lot of unprofitable businesses. There's people that are losing money by having people underneath them. Most businesses are losing money for a lot of the beginning and sometimes throughout, you know, they have choppy years. Like for me now, my like different media, I lose money every single video I publish because I'm not getting the views that I used to get. And I'm hiring out editing and I'm hiring out some of the filmmaking. And for me, it's always been an average game with that business, but I just haven't had anything pop and bring that average up. It's like each video is like a startup, you know, like I don't have the consistency on my channel. I don't get 400,000 views every video. I get between, like, right now it's crazy numbers. I'm getting like between like 3,000 and 20,000, like on average. And one video out of months will get 500,000. And that video pays for all the other ones because those other ones aren't even breaking even. So I've known that. And I think in the long run, basically most of the videos do break even. And then there's still those outliers, but it's like over like a long period of time. And it's also with a lot of effort on my part. It's promoting those videos. It's leveraging them in every single possible way that I can by turning them into and doing extra editing work myself, which I actually could get somebody else to do possibly. But, you know, that's an expense that, like, I'm not sure I can afford right now. But so businesses ebb and flow. And I think the viewership is down for my channel because of interest. I think basically creating these types of documentaries that I'm creating, which is a single subject look into somebody's life that is living in an alternative dwelling. I think the general interest in that subject is way down. The other thing is too, is it's a super saturated market now. There's people just completely out competing me because of probably capital. They can hire a lot more people and they can probably pay a lot more than I can. And I'm bootstrapping this whole thing, never gotten a loan for this. And bootstrapping it is hard sometimes because I'm not always making money from it, enough money from it. So it's tough. I'm definitely still in the startup phase after years of this business. But what's crazy about that is there's a lot of companies out there that are losing money every single person they hire and every single hour that that person works. And I'm getting almost to a position where it's not becoming profitable anymore because these videos, like I said, are becoming kind of a commodity, which is, you know, when that happens, maybe it's time for me to pivot. Maybe it's time for me to pivot, and maybe that's what this is. And with that, go check out this book, link in the description, buy it up, paperback, especially ebook if you have to, if you don't have the cash. And thanks everybody for watching and listening, and I'll get into it next time.